Welcome to All Learning Reimagined, the podcast that defines convention and redefines the purpose and practice of education. Here we venture beyond institutional boundaries. Whether you're a parent, educator, or curious mind devoted to lifelong growth, this is your space to challenge assumptions and co-create a more humane and intuitive approach to education. Let's reimagine what education can be.
Hello, hello, hello. And welcome to All Learning Reimagined. I'm your host, Teresa, bringing you a little ray of sunshine, as together we're reimagining the future of education, one inspired story at a time. I don't have any guests today. It's just me. You'll have to put up with my rabbiting on, but I have lots to say, lots of information that seems to be coming through, and it feels like this message needs to get out there. So here we go. Today's topic is actually going to be about how can we be solution focused? What sort of steps can we take right now, particularly if you're a parent or an educator that's questioning what we can do? But mainly from the parent perspective is where I'm coming from today, because I know that as a parent myself, years ago, I was really shocked when I heard about the whole J.D. Rockefeller vision of education. And it seems to be that the information is doing the rounds again on social media. It seems to come up again and again. And it popped up again the other day. And I thought, you know what? I have a feeling that this needs to come out for those people who have not had it brought into their awareness yet, or if they haven't really taken any notice of it. So the short version really is this. J.D. Rockefeller, back in 1902, spent $129 million to create the public education system, really a general education board as we know it today, for our public system or our government systems, I guess you could really call it. And he famously said, and I quote, "I don't want a nation of thinkers, I want a nation of workers." So before that, there actually used to be an agrarian age, and people used to own their own businesses and own their own farms, and they really only went to school 1 or 2 hours a week to learn how to read and write and do basic math, because the life skills they were learning every day, and they were just living their life. And J.D. Rockefeller actually had a different vision at that stage, because it was the beginning of the Industrial Revolution starting to come through. And so then that asks the question, well, how long does it actually take to indoctrinate a nation, really? And the research said that it took about 12 years. And so that's how long it takes to normalize everything that's happening with the change. So I guess at the time, the team or Rockefeller himself or the team around him decided to make school 12 years long. Now, even though it wasn't compulsory to do the 12 years at that stage, it's slowly crept into a lot of the cultures around the world. Not all of the cultures, but many of them, particularly in the Western societies. So we had a 5-day long week came in. The bell for morning tea and lunch was introduced so that everybody could get used to factory conditions. And they also introduced a grading system, which was really a communication to future employers, because boys and girls, men and women, living beings who got A's, who received A's, we knew would become a good employee. And it really rewarded people who were compliant and could regurgitate facts and information. And so when asked what will children learn for 5 hours a day, 5 days a week, for actually 12 years, the response given was, well, we're going to teach them everything about nothing. I'm going to say that again. We're going to teach them everything about nothing. Part of what sparked the topic for me today is that a few weeks ago, I had a conversation with a high school student. a teenager, and she actually said, "Why are we learning this stuff? I can simply Google it." She uses Google, but I could just look it up. So why do I have to learn all of these facts and figures? And she was really pushing and questioning a lot of things about the system. And we're seeing a lot of this happening today. There's a lot of children who have school refusal, and they're not seeing the relevance in it's not resonating with children today. And there's a lot of pushback with what's going on in education. So there's a huge swing and a huge shift away from the J.D. Rockefeller vision of education. Because in general, and I'm speaking very generally here, schools really tell children what to think. They don't really guide or teach them how to think. And this is nothing new. We've heard this over and over again, and people sort of rabbit on about it all the time. But how can we be solution focused? What can we actually do about this? Because when we reflect on what is educational about our current public education system, it doesn't really teach children things like conflict resolution or how to start a business, how to grow your own food, thinking critically and discerning with research using a variety of tools, not just the biased or corporation tools handed to them, aka Google. How to trust your intuition and or build wealth and financial freedom, emotional regulation. I could go on and on and on. There's so many things that are just missing. They're touched upon at a surface level, but really not mastered or valued, in my opinion, in these types of systems today. And what I have observed over my 30 plus years within the education system, across different countries, is it really teaches children how to follow rules, sit, comply, follow authority, trust the experts, trust the science, regurgitate facts, and not trust your own experience. And let's face it, that's one of the biggest things and tools that we have for learning is our own experience. Seeing is believing is an absolute crock of rubbish, quite frankly, because we're only seeing something like 1% of the spectrum of what's really around us. So that's an absolute lie. And the whole training of herd mentality is really wearing thin at this stage, although we're still seeing it, because in essence, it just creates workers, just as Rockefeller predicted, really. Get in line, sit still, focus on the test. We're going to take your energy, your time, your freedom, but we're going to label it and say that this is what you have to do to be successful. And we bought into this. We've bought into this. I know I bought into this throughout my lifetime until I really reflected and took the time to have a look and think, what are we doing? And when you know better, you do better, of course. Particularly with the structures and things that are going on out there, really does make you wonder around what we're seeking and what the children who are rebelling from the structure at the moment, what are they seeking? From the perspective that I'm sitting at and the many people that I connect with, I'm seeing that they're seeking authenticity. They want genuine connection, not only to themselves, but to nature, to other people, to their own curiosity. And yet, on the flip side, I'm seeing a lot of people who are really addicted to technology, and they are completely disconnected with who and what they are and have that surface level. So that's a bit of a concern, really. And I'm hoping that we can swing full circle with this one. I'm seeing people seeking for relevance and purpose and creativity. Creativity has been crushed. It has been pushed aside. It has been degraded. And it's one of the most important things, skill sets, precious things to value, creativity in any different field. And everyone thinks, oh, creativity, I need to be able to paint, I need to be able to sing. No, creative could be you're going to go and build a chook shed that looks like the Taj Mahal. It could be anything, building with your hands. It doesn't have to be creating with your hands, it could be creating with your voice. It's on so many different levels as creating. Even creating a new document, writing a new document, speaking in a different way, learning a new language communicating is still a little bit of creativity. Building a beautiful garden. There's just so many ways to be able to do this sort of thing. And, newsflash, everybody knows children are biologically designed to educate themselves, and they do it naturally as children through play, questioning, curiosity. They explore, they express themselves, their whole willfulness, because they know what they want and they're not afraid to express that that's what they want until that gets educated out of them by adults, I'm of the understanding now, from where I am, in a standing now, that we simply just need to create the environment and provide resources and the conditions. And if we get out of the way, or just be there as a guide or a mentor when they need it, the children will educate themselves. And our current GovCo systems really are taking away their natural abilities when we put them in these over-regulated environments and prevent them from thinking and exploring and making their own mistakes and educating themselves. So from there, what do we do about this? Let's go back to solution focused. Well, speaking for myself, I decided I was going to stop whinging about the system because for years it was just, there's this, there's that. I could tell you all of the things that were going wrong. And then I realized that we are all co-creating this system and we're perpetuating it by participating in it. And what we walk by without saying anything is what we consent to. Our silence and inaction is essentially consent to what's going on. And if we choose to change, then we can. And a lot of people are, a lot of places are, a lot of beings are. And no, it's not easy at first. It's not easy to go against the grain and to push back and to question paradigms and programming and social engineering that has happened for so long. But the long-term consequence that I can see for this, if we continue on the path that we're going, is a very steady decline. So, Teresa, I hear you say, well, what are we going to do about it? Well, there's from the box seat that I'm sitting in, I'm seeing two distinct choices that seem to be in front of us. The first one, stop participating in the system. And that's huge decision. And there are a lot of brave men and women out there who have made this decision. They're homeschooling, and they're taking things within their own, taking back their own control. However, not everybody has the capacity to do this. And so, if that's the case, then what's the other option? The other option is, if your children are still going to be participating in a traditional schooling setting, then at home, in the home setting, then you really need to counterbalance where possible. It doesn't actually have to be all or nothing. And if you don't counterbalance, because this is really essential, then essentially the system are going to shape your children with someone else's beliefs and someone else's values. So there are a lot of things that we can teach children in the home, resilience, communication, financial literacy, listening to your own inner guidance, how to feel aligned and live a life of your own values and not be out there flip-flopping and changing for approval. How to care for your own health through your diet or your exercise or breath work, whatever it is that you do that you value. Building real world skills, cooking and cleaning and just navigating society at this stage. One of the most important skills that I can imagine parents can give is giving children a voice and helping them to learn to use that voice with confidence, creativity, how to spot manipulation, how to question authority in a way that's not going to get you in trouble, but still stand your ground, put your boundaries in. And question if things don't feel right and give them strategies on how to get themselves out of situations if it feels really off, if their intuition is telling them, what are some strategies and things that they can do? It doesn't have to be all or nothing. And we don't have to flip the whole world upside down in order to raise conscious, powerful children, but we actually do need to be consciously raising them. We cannot, by default, flip through our life and be so caught up in our own heads and not take note of the role model that we are for our children and the environment that our children are being brought up in, and the balance of what's happening in their schooling environment or their learning environment versus what you're doing at home. So that then led me to stop and think about other things that parents could possibly do. And I was listening to a podcast not long ago, and it was actually by a woman called Diane Cooper. And I'd seen that she had written books, but I'd never heard her speak before. And she was discussing Lemuria and Atlantis times. And she spoke about the need to teach children empathy and how it could be done through animals. And that really sparked my interest. I thought, oh, that's actually really pr pretty cool. And she was talking about back in the times of Atlantis, and I have no idea. I don't have a memory of that time. Possibly do, but I'm not quite sure. Not in this consciousness, anyway. But the children had a dog, and that dog was their companion, and it was also their protector. And that dog actually went to their schooling environment, whatever they called it back then, with them, tra was with them all of the time. All of these children also had a cat. And the cat, of course, is a watcher of energies. We've all seen the cat bouncing off the wall, chasing something invisible that we can't see, but we know that it senses things. Just like the lions are the watchers of the energy for the whole planet. The cats can see lots of different energies. And so the children back then had their dog, their protector and their companion, and they had their cat. And the other animal that they had mostly was a rabbit, which of course is a heart healer because it's so cuddly and so soft. And emanating, divine feminine energies as well. And the line that really s that struck me that Diane had set had mentioned in this podcast was she said that when children have these animals around them, they have to tune into the needs of another creature. They have to show compassion and care for another living being, which makes them not self-absorbed. Well, you could have blown me down with a feather because I have for years now started seeing so many children that have become so self-absorbed, and also some of the parents as well. It's almost like, they're so busy taking selfies of themselves. And I don't mean just as a sense of fun, I mean as a sense of they are. Everything revolves around them, which technically it does because we're creating our own universe. But you know what I mean. To actually stop and care for another living being, like an animal, genuinely care for them is a really precious gift that we could give our children, as a learning tool and as a life lesson, and something that parents could do to counterbalance anything that might be happening in the learning environment. Personally, I think all schools should have a chook shed where the children can collect the eggs, and they should have animals that they can be caring for and looking after. It would be a wonderful gift, in my opinion. And then from there, after really reflecting on that conversation and that podcast, it actually made me stop and think, what have I been doing over the years, and what have I done as a parent? And one of the biggest bugbears as a parent for me, particularly in the schooling setting, was homework. Now, I don't know if you call it homework in all the other countries for the people who are listening, but in Australia, we call it homework. So after doing your 5 to 6 hours a day of school, children go home and then they're expected to do 1, 2 plus hours each night of homework, depending on the age group. And they're exhausted, children exhausted. And over the years, I've seen a lot of children almost burn out because they have over scheduled, over prescribed home lives as well. It's almost like a timetabled home life. You need to go to drama, and then you need to go to speech, and now you have to go to sport, and now you need to play a musical instrument, and then you have to do this, and then you have to do that. And where is the downtime? Where is the play? Where is the rest? At some stage, cognitive overload has got to kick in. And my suggestion, I'm not telling anyone what to do and would never tell anyone what to do, but my suggestion is to consider that if things are not working for you in the homework field and you are doing option number two, which is counterbalancing children going to school, if you're not homeschooling, then try and consider going and negotiating homework with the teacher or the educator, because the majority of educators are there because they really truly care about children. And if you communicate them with about your values and your needs and what's going on in the home environment, then of course that they would work with you to try and do the best thing that we can. And I'm not a fan of homework. I mean, work. Homework doesn't even sound appealing. I mean, we're not robots. Our brains need rest, and children need time for play and creativity and experiences. And there is something that I'm going to share with you, which I did use a long time ago when I was teaching in a primary school, many years ago, but it was really successful. And I haven't been in that environment for quite a while, so I haven't had the opportunity to play in this space. But instead of homework, I had created a home learning grid. And I'm actually going to attach it to this week's article. So when I publish the article this week, because I publish one every week to align with the topic of our podcast, I'll show you an example of what this grid looks like so you can play with it and tweak it. It was fantastic, actually. And what I used to do is I would meet with parents face to face or have a phone interview, and I would negotiate with them the types of activities that we would put in this home learning grid in order to suit their lifestyle. So if they were a sporting family, a camping and fishing family, if they were into the arts, whatever it happens to be, and what the parents valued and what they really wanted their children to focus their time and energy on, we put it in the grid. So almost every child had a slightly different grid to the person next to them. And I had the full support then of the parents, the grandparents, whoever happened to be at home, when it came to homework. And I know that a lot of the single parents in particular expressed huge gratitude at not having to argue and fight about the homework because it aligned to what they were doing. And as a result, there was a much happier home life, and what they were expected to do had more relevance and created deeper relationships. And I'll give you an example of some of the things that I used to put on the home learning grid. So I had one column. I actually had four or five columns, but I had one column that was non-negotiable. The children were expected every single week that they had to complete everything that was in that one column. The first one were chores. The household jobs basically that they did were negotiated with the family. They had to be age appropriate, and it was what was going to help the parent out around the house. And it was part of their homework in order to do this. The second one was exercise or sport, depending once again on the family and what the situation is and the interests of the children. The third one was reading, and it didn't have to be reading, a textbook or anything important. It was reading anything of interest that the child wanted, even if it was, they really loved building Lego. Well, let's read the instructions on the Lego on how to build it. They were still reading. The fourth one was a gratitude journal. Every single week, the children were expected to write down three things that they were grateful for. And oh my goodness gracious me. When I first started this, some children really struggled to flip their thinking to what they were grateful for. It was very much me, me, me. And that was a really interesting lesson to observe with the children. And it became much easier for them, but it really helped them stop and focus on what they were thankful and grateful for. So that was very successful. And the last one on the compulsory must complete column was to play or rest. So the play was not allowed to have any technology. So it was definitely not gaming, no video games. That was not part of the homework. Or they could choose to rest, and rest as in just deep breathing, sitting still in silence, and being present, because we did do a lot of that in the classroom anyway. After lunchtime, we would come back and we would be present, so they knew exactly how to do that. So after that column, that was pretty much what was expected. Then they were expected to choose one or two of any of the other options that were in the rest of the grid. So any of the other, whichever one took their fancy, depending on their lifestyle, depending on what was happening for them that week. But over the course of the entire term, which on, it was generally around 10 weeks in Australia, they were expected to do to complete the entire grid. Now, of course, the overachievers wanted to try and achieve the whole thing straight away, and that was okay. And then others would just do the bare minimum and then have to do a lot at the very end of term to round it up. It was quite interesting, but this was the part that a lot of the parents loved to negotiate and have the conversations with. So there were things like caring for your pet or animals, creating, as in building or writing or drawing or painting, it doesn't matter, just creating something. A passion project, something that they love to do themselves. Music, playing an instrument, listening to music, writing a song, singing. There was a very various things that were music. Random acts of kindness or helping someone in need, and it needed to be anonymous. And I did that as well as a role model. So usually with a home learning grid, I did the same, and I would report back to the class on the sorts of things that I did. For example, it's tradition for me for many years now, around Christmas time at the end of the year, I would always pay for someone's haircut anonymously. I would just go into a hair salon. Sometimes there were salons I'd never even been to, and just say I'd like to pay for a haircut for someone that you really feel needs it. They may not have the money, and I would just pay it. And to this day, I have absolutely no idea who or how that went. I've got no idea. I don't really care. I just wanted to make sure that I could make someone's day and pay it forward. So that random act of kindness. So I would share these sorts of examples with children, and it was amazing the sorts of things that they came up with as well. You know, doing little anonymous things for people in their neighborhood or someone in the family, and it was really lovely. Other things on the home learning grid, there was always something to do with the garden, you know, mowing or trimming or growing or harvesting or even hugging a tree. We always had some sort of option there to do with gardening or the outdoors. There was always one to do with cooking, or playing cards or board games. I did have one that was a bit controversial, but worked really well, and that was called Speak Your Truth. And the children had to write a message, and it could be to me, it could be to anybody in their lives, but it was a dear such and such, I would like you to know. And then they had to speak their truth. And that one had mixed results, but was really quite powerful because they did learn to be able to be authentic and speak their truth. Some of them actually used that as an opportunity to let me know what was going on in their lives, something that they wanted me to be aware of, and that was really a really good opportunity for them to speak in that stage as well. I always had one to do with humor because, let's face it, there's always someone in the classroom that likes a laugh and has that high fun need. So the grid, the example that I've got here that I've got that I will publish with my article is tell someone three jokes or do something to make them laugh. And it could be anything. It could be a skit, a dress up, or whatever you want to do. And then the last example that I'm going to share today was having a date with someone. And I don't mean, you know, ooh la la, not that type of date. I mean, choose a family member that you're going to spend one-on-one uninterrupted time with, a date. And I actually got this idea from a guidance officer that I worked with years ago, and I think he had about six kids in his family. And I said, how do you spread yourself through, you know, how do you spend time with six children? And he said, oh, I have a date with them. So over the course of a couple of months, he would always have one-on-one date time with one child, and the child got to negotiate what they wanted to do with their dad. And, you know, one would want to go fishing, one would want to go to bowling, one would want to go to the markets or go for a bush walk or whatever it was that they negotiated, they had date time with dad. And I thought that was amazing. I love, love, loved that and thought that was pretty precious. So I added that on the home learning grid. So all of the examples that you can hear about are just living a life, and they were fantastic. And while I negotiated this with the parents the first time around, the following term, then once the children understood how the grid worked and how the home learning grid, then they were able to negotiate any changes, anything that they wanted, and then they had their voice the second time around so that we could negotiate what we wanted to have for the learning grid. And a lot of the passion projects and things that they were really interested in came out from that, and it sort of grew from there, which was really fantastic. I just loved this idea. So there were these sorts of things that you can do. Whether you're an educator or a parent, it doesn't really matter. But there are a lot of things that we can do in this space to help bring forward what we value. It's just amazing, just amazing. And that is pretty much all I'm going to share with you this week because, as usual, we have run out of time. But I did want to just bring it up because it's something that's doing the rounds and I wanted to share some of these ideas and hopefully spark some conversation. And if anyone's got any wonderful suggestions, then please contact me on bbsradio.com/all learning reimagined. And would love for you to reach out and be able to connect with you. So thanks for joining me today on All Learning Reimagined. Until next week, explore, experience, express, go out, and live learning. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for joining us on All Learning Reimagined, where passion illuminates the path forward. Remember this: the future of learning doesn't arrive from above, it begins within. You are the spark, the shift, the living answer to education's silent call for transformation. So stay curious, stay awake. Let inspiration be your compass, because how we learn today is not just personal, it is profoundly generative. It shapes the very architecture of tomorrow's world. We are not separate from the system, we are its evolution. Until next time, trust the wisdom of your own unfolding and let your life be the lessons that light the way for others.